Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brave.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. On today's episode, my guest is Barry Darso, who was obviously known most famously as Demolition Smash, but we talk about his run in Mid-Atlantic, of course, Demolition, the Repo Man, the WWE Hall of Fame, and much, much more. So that is coming up later in the show. Last episode, I had Jamie Dundee on, and I got tons of great feedback on the interview. So Jamie was a fun guest, and I intend to have him back on in the future. And I hope you enjoyed my chat with Jamie. It was Jamie's a wild guy and very, very fun to talk to. So that was in the last episode. And if you also listen to the other shows on the WrestleCopia network, and you very much should, then you would have heard Ray Russell announce that in the next couple weeks, I will be making an appearance on his regional wrestling podcast, the show that talks the territories. Well, of course, if I'm on a guest on a podcast like that, and we're going to talk a territory, it's going to be about Indianapolis and the WWA. We gave an overview of the WWA and it hit the highlights of the history of the promotion, and it will be a great listen for fans of the WWA and for those who aren't as familiar with the promotion and would like to learn more. So when that's released, be sure to give it a listen, and then make sure you also subscribe to the Regional Wrestling Podcast because it is a great listen for every episode. And also, though, this will not be my last appearance on the show talking about the WWA, so you don't want to miss any of those. I had to push the date on the first episode of the Stampede Wrestling Deep Dive to this coming Sunday, September 22nd. Wasn't where I wanted to be with my research on it. I want to make sure that I do all the research and give myself another week to do that. So I apologize for the delay, but it is coming. I just wanted to make sure that I got everything together before I recorded that. Again, in that episode, I will be looking at January 1988 in the history of Stampede Wrestling, so be sure to subscribe to not miss that. All right, I think that's all the new business that I have to talk about. Let's take a break, and when I come back, we will have our guest, Barry Darso, Demolition Smash.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by a man who has been known as Crusher Khrushchev, the Repo Man, Blacktop Bully, and of course, Demolition Smash. I'm talking to Barry Darso. Suri, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get spend quite a while listing off all the names you've worked under.
Yeah, you only covered a couple of them.
Yeah, there's still some. I left a few off there just for time's sake, I think. But
yeah,
you were versatile, I guess.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
Yeah, well, you went to the famed high school in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, with Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, Tom Zink, John Norton, Nikita Koloff. Did you know any of those guys while going to school?
Yeah, I knew them all. You know, and Brady Boone.
Yeah, Brady Boone. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you were all athletes.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody was in, you know, football, baseball, hockey, or gymnastics or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so wild in retrospect to look at how many professional wrestlers came from that high school. It's just wild to think of that. But a lot of guys came from, I mean, Minnesota, you know, I mean, look at all the names that came from Minnesota. Speaking of, you also worked as a bouncer with the Road Warriors.
Yes, I did. Yeah, we all broke into wrestling at the same time. It was Rick Rude, the Road Warriors, and myself. And we were all working at a bar in Northeast Minneapolis. And that's where Eddie Sharkey was a bartender there. And he's the one that got us into wrestling.
Yeah, you were trained by Eddie. And that's how you connected with him then, right? Through the bar or whatever. Were you a professional wrestling fan, or did Eddie just, you know, see your size and talk you into it, or how did that work?
I was always a fan. Growing up, I watched Vern Gagne's wrestling.
Of course.
And that was on every Sunday after church. I'd run home as fast as I could to see the show on TV. And then, Harley Race and Larry the Axe Hennig, the Crusher, the Bruiser, they were always my favorite, and Baron Von Reschke. And then, I got to know Kurt back when I was in junior high. And then we kind of started hanging around together and training a bit together. And that's, kind of what really got me to figure out, well, maybe I do got a chance to get into wrestling. You know, I never really thought about it until, I started training with Kurt, or I should say Kurt started training with myself and Wayne Bloom at the gym.
Yeah.
And then I used to tell Kurt all the time, when are you going to get into wrestling? You know, and finally one day he came in, he says, I'm going to Vern Gagne's camp. Yeah. And then that was kind of when I thought, you know what, I'm going to get into professional wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Wayne Bloom. I'm a huge Wayne Bloom flip. Mike, you know, some Wayne Bloom. I think we're such an underappreciated tag team. They were, I think they were great. Yeah. Did you guys get to work them? Yeah, that was a different time period, right? When they came in as the Beverly Brothers.
Yeah, I was the Repo Man when they
were. You were Repo, there. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I always thought they were. I loved them in AWA as the Destruction Crew. And yep.
I always thought they were underutilized when they went
and to New York. Yeah, two good guys too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I spoke to them a few times. I'm hoping to have them on to interview them too, but they don't like doing a lot of stuff anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard. You know, there's so many different podcasts and
all it is.
Different stuff. And right now I have I'm on, 2-3 hours a week. I got a gentleman writing a book on me.
Oh yeah.
So it's really hard to get time to even talk, with the family, and I'm building a house, and I got so much stuff going on. And on the weekends I still travel.
Yeah.
This weekend I'm going to Des Moines, Iowa. Me and Axe are going to be there.
Yeah. So, and I know for your side, I mean, you do a lot of these, it feels like you're telling the same stories over and over, and it gets a little redundant, I'm sure,
but I know it's different fans that listen to different ones. So,
yeah. Well, I appreciate that, but, I'm just going to hit the highlight. You wrestled in Georgia for a bit as Band Mountain Darso.
Yeah.
And then you moved to Mid-South. That's where you really started getting a little exposure. And you were, at first you were Kresho Darso, a Soviet sympathizer, tag team partner, Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah.
And, that gimmick, that has Bill Watts written all over it.
Yep. He's the one that started me as Pressure Khrushchev. I remember, when I was Man Mountain Darso, I was a baby face and I just couldn't even do promos. And I really didn't even know how to work or anything. And I was kind of learning. And then one day Bill called me in his office. And he says, Barry, we're going to make you a heel and you're going to learn how to work awful fast. And I said, hey, whatever you want. And he goes, well, I want you to be an American that loves Russian, and you're going to be partners with Nikolai Volkov, and you're going to go on a promo, and you're going to bring a shovel, and you're going to tell everybody you're going to bury all of them, all Americans.
Yeah.
And he says, you're going to have so much heat, you're going to learn how to work.
Yeah. Nikolai's another guy that I feel doesn't get the proper respect, because guys a lot of times remember his late years, right, when he was – not utilized to the best, but man, Nikolai was a big guy and was a great worker back in the day in Mid-South.
Strong guy. Yeah. Big, strong guy. But, he was limited to his, the work that he did. He wasn't a guy that did arm drags or gave arm drags. And, I was a guy that would take arm drags, but I could never really give arm drags. I mean, I was, as a good heel, you got to be able to take everything.
Sure.
You don't really need to know how to do everything, but you need to take it. So
what prompted Bill to, what prompted the name change from Kresho Darso to Kresho Khrushchev?
Well, the Kresho Khrushchev, that was, Bill Watts. He said, you're going to bury all Americans and your new name is Kresho Khrushchev.
Yeah.
And
obviously a Russian leader or whatever he was back in the day. I don't know what
right,
he was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And then when I left there, then I went to, Florida Championship Wrestling and, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. We became partners. So then I got him to like Russians also.
Yeah.
And that's how the tag team down there was. So I had a good run as Kresho Khrushchev.
You did, right? Yeah, you went through Florida with Jim. And then you went to, probably where most people remember you from, you went to the Carolinas. And you were with Ivan and Nikita. And man, that's a big time position to be put in at that time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And by that time, now I could work. I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I was very comfortable wrestling anybody,
Yeah. And we talked about underappreciated guy. I mean, Ivan Cole. Ivan Cole is one of my favorite guys of all time because he was good. So good. Such a good worker. And I cannot believe that guy is not in the Hall of Fame yet, in the WWE Hall of Fame. I mean, he was the guy that ended Bruno's reign. Ivan was such a great guy.
And I learned a lot from Ivan, too. He was a good, good worker.
Yeah, so many people did. Yeah, he was I always loved Ivan. And you were in the Carolinas for a while, but I heard that you left because of a pay dispute with Jimmy Crockett. Is that true? What's the story there?
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, I had I worked a long program with the Rock and Roll Express, and we were supposed to do a big match, and it ended up where it put Nikita and Ivan in there, and then they told me that I was going to get the same pay as if I was in the match. And it ended up being where I got paid half as much as what they got paid. And I went into Crockett, and we had a big dispute. And I said, well, I'm leaving then. I put my notice in. That was the end of it.
Yeah. And then shortly after, you went to WWE. And where you were named Smash, Team Ability. And this is after they removed Randy Colley from the team. So I always wondered, were you brought in specifically to join Demolition? Or were you already going there anyway, and then they decided they put you in Demolition because of the issue there with Randy?
No, they brought me in to be Smash.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so when I quit Crockett's territory, I was going to just take a little bit of time off and go to Japan and, you know, kind of do that kind of stuff. And then Ricky Steamboat and Earl Hebner kind of got the word out to Vince that I was looking for a job. Mm-hmm. And Vince called me up. I went up there and he presented me with the whole deal. And I had Bill Eady had to approve that I was going to be the partner.
Yeah.
So okay. Bill was in Japan. So it took about 2 weeks, and finally Vince called me and says, yeah, we are going to hire you and you're going to be one of the Demolition. And that's how it all started.
Yeah. And obviously that's, I mean, your greatest exposure, probably what, you know, obviously what you're most known for, obviously.
Yeah.
And I mean, Demolition was a hit. I mean, you know, you just right off the bat, you guys originally were managed by Johnny Valiant.
Yeah.
But things really clicked when Mr. Fuji was managing. You and Mr. Fuji just seemed like the absolutely perfect match. It just seemed to work so well.
Yeah, you know, we met with Johnny Valiant Jimmy Valiant and Johnny Valiant. Yeah,
Johnny V, yeah.
And we told him, we said that it just wasn't working with him because he was more of a jokester.
Right,
and we needed somebody serious. And he said, yeah, I totally agree with you. That's just not my gimmick, because he wanted to be himself and we wanted to be ourselves.
Yeah.
So we went to Vince and said, we need to get another manager. And he says, well, how about Fuji? And we said, definitely Fuji.
Yeah, it worked so well.
That's kind of how it was.
Yeah, it worked so well. I mean, I'm a huge Johnny Valiant fan, though, because he was big in the Midwest, big in Bruiser's promotion when I grew up. So, you know, I knew Johnny from that, you know, watching that. So I always loved Johnny, but you're right. It didn't fit. And, but yeah, you guys and Fuji just clicked. I don't know what it was, just perfect. It just seemed to work so well. And, you guys were, you were right from the get go. You were featured prominently. You were in Strong, and all the way up to your WrestleMania 4, where you won the tag titles for the first time from Strikeforce. And, you had held numerous titles before and everything else everywhere you went, but this is a little different, right? This is WWE tag titles at WrestleMania. Man, that had to be, even for a veteran, that had to be kind of a cool feeling.
It was pretty cool, you know, and, you know, we met, you know, Donald Trump there and his wife, and, you know, mm-hmm. That was when a lot of the stars were starting to come in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a huge, huge event, and, you know, it meant a lot, you know. But, you know, when you're wrestling, you know, 8, 9, 10 times a week, you know, mm-hmm. it's almost like you get there, and it was a big match, but it really was just another day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And, because when it's done, you're already ready for the next, you're on to the next town.
Yeah. And it's kind of a pain because, you know, you're there a couple of days before, and you had all the interviews and promos, and, you know, you don't sleep, and, you know, the WrestleMania day, you're there for 10, 12 hours, you know, and you're in the ring for that, you know, 15, 20 minutes or whatever. And it's just like, it's easier just to go to, you know, some little town and go wrestle and get out of there, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But it is a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's at the time, right? In the moment, you guys didn't have, you know, you didn't have time to sit back and reflect and enjoy like you do now, right? And when you look back on your career. So,
right.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. We won the tag titles. It was WrestleMania, but oh yeah, now we got to make the next town and keep doing this thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was, you know, it was the top tag teams everywhere. It was just phenomenal. So for them to put the belts on us that night, I mean, it, Don't get me wrong. That was huge, and I was very grateful.
Right, yeah.
But it, you know, it's, you know, when you think reality, it's just, you know, out of all those tag teams, you're picked to be the champs. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's just everybody's really equal.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Sure. Yeah, sure.
And you know, when we wrestled the Killer Bees, you know, they were just as good as us, or mm-hmm. you know, the, you know, Heart Foundation or the British Bully. We were all equal teams. It just happened that they were putting the belts on us. So sure. That's how I always looked at it. Yeah. You know, where some guys, it goes to their head, you know, oh, we're the tag team champions. We're the best. Well, really, you're not the best.
Yeah.
you know, it's a work.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you can say, oh, yeah, they're the toughest guys in the world. Well, we weren't. People let us win.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, all right. Yeah. I mean, it's. People get caught up in that, right? I mean, especially fans, and wonder, you know, this team's better than this team. It's like, there is something to be said for, you know, what they can do in the ring. And there's, you know,
right.
Clearly guys worked better than others and understood the flow of matches and everything else. Clearly.
Right. And then the office has to say, hey, this is, we're going to do this with these guys and this and this. And
yeah,
they only let you do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to do incredible what they say to do to get over.
Sure.
And that's what worked for Bill and I. We were such good partners that they would tell us to do things. And I, you know, I don't want to brag or anything, but I thought we did a really good job at it.
Yeah,
and that's
sure.
Probably why we had the belts three times.
Yeah. And again, it's, you know, I mean, there's different reasonings for picking a champion, whether they are the most over, whether they are, I mean, but it could just be simple. Who's selling the most shirts, or what fits best into the story we're telling here?
And, who do we trust?
Who do we trust? Right. Yeah, you hear that all the time, especially in territories. You know, you hear it like in Memphis. Why did Jerry Lawler hold that title 50 times? Well, because Jerry Lawler was an owner, and they knew he'd show up every Monday night in Memphis.
Exactly. You know, and Vince knew we weren't going to hold them up for money, and we weren't going to steal the belts, and we weren't going to, you know, if they said, hey, you got to get beat tomorrow, then he knew we were going to get beat tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys were a little different as far as these strong power teams, because you guys did bump. You did sell for other teams and make them look good, but you knew when to pick your spots to really get over. And it was a little different, right? It wasn't just all crush the opponent, 3 minutes, done. You guys worked. And it was a little different than some of your contemporaries.
Right. And when it was time for us to get on our opponents, we made it look like we were killing them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then when it was time for them, we made it look like, holy shit, these guys are tough because they're throwing us around, you know, and that was what we did.
Yeah. And there's something to be said for that, right? Because when you beat them, you've beat somebody.
Right. Yeah. And every team wanted to work with us. Because we did fly for them.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, a lot of the big teams wouldn't fly around for smaller teams.
Sure.
But that's what got you the heat. You're these big, strong, tough guys that can beat anybody up. But then yet this little guy's throwing you around and he caught you off guard and you're taking bumps. Oh, you know, that's. Well,
yeah. I mean, it's all about working the crowd, right? Giving them that feeling that, hey, Demolition might get beat tonight, right? This might be it. But then Demolition wins. So you have to, if they're not, if they don't think Demolition can be beat, what's the point?
Right. And, right.
Yeah.
So Dave, have I ever met you before?
No, not yet. No, I was planning to come to Raleigh a few weeks ago when you guys went to Raleigh, and I think it was GalaxyCon. And then I had a schedule thing. I couldn't be there. But I've not been at an event.
How do you know Phil then?
Phil, just from the Midwest, we, you know, him in Michigan, me being in Indiana. We're honestly, the biggest connection with me and Phil is that we are both huge WWA fans and Bruiser Bedlam fans.
Okay.
That show later. Yeah, that's how we connect. A lot of mutual guys is how we met with, you know, Jerry Graham Jr., Great Wojo, some of those Midwest guys. And that's how me and Phil connected and everything else. I worked a little back in the late 90s, early 2000s in the Midwest. Nothing prominent, nothing real great.
Right.
That's how me and Phil knew each other, because he was big in the Midwest at that time and everything else. So no, I've not had the pleasure to meet you yet.
So did you ever work over in Chicago? And
I did. Yeah. I worked in Chicago a few times worked a couple of times with Windy City Wrestling and a few other things. And I worked in Chicago a few times.
With Billy Blaze by any chance?
I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't work actually with him. I don't know if he was on the card or not. I don't remember. Maybe. Yeah,
Billy Blaze runs some shows around Chicago, where he used to, and he had some big, big houses, big shows.
Mm-hmm.
A real good guy to work for over there. And Windy City Wrestling too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a couple of things for Windy City. And I was, at that time, my big Chicago connection was, I don't know if you know him, but it was Ronnie Vegas, Dice Man Ronnie Vegas.
Vegas, great guy.
That was my guy I knew in Chicago that got me on a couple shows up there and everything else. Because he would come down in Indiana a lot and work a lot of shows that I was on. And I knew Dice Man. Yeah, so.
Right.
Yeah, that was my Chicago connection. And I went up there and, stayed at his house a couple times and worked some shows and everything else. I was always liked Dice.
And I was texting with him not too long ago. Every once in a while, he'll text me and we text back and forth.
Yeah, I was wondering about him. How's he doing?
He's doing really good.
Good. I haven't talked to him or seen him in years, and I've lost touch with him over the years and stuff. And I actually asked somebody the other day how he was doing, and they said they hadn't heard from him in a while either. So that's good to hear. Dice was a funny guy. He was always fun to work with and be around. And I love Dice. Good guy. And you at Survivor Series 88. You and the Powers of Pain, you pulled a double turn, which is a hard thing to do in wrestling. Not pulled off great all the time, but you guys pulled it off. What was the talk leading up to this? Right, you almost Demolition almost had to turn because you guys were so over with the crowd. You were already being cheered. It's almost like you just had to do it.
Yeah, they sprung it on us at TV. It wasn't anything that was planned or anything by us. Mm-hmm. They just came and they said, we're going to turn you guys babyface, and you're going to wrestle the Powers of Pain, and Fuji's going to turn on you, and he's going to go with them. And, and that's how it was. So, it was kind of this, spur of the moment deal, and it surprised the heck out of the boss too, they like to do that to the guys, They don't want to tell you anything because they think you're going to say something to people and get the word out or whatever. But it ended up working out all right. I thought they could have had a better angle and built up to that. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of times everything just goes so fast where they could spend a couple of months working towards it and then change. Make it a lot bigger of a deal.
Right. Yeah. And again, it was, I don't know. I always love the Powers of Pain, but it just, they came off. I don't know. They didn't really work in the WWE as well as what they could have, I don't think, but for whatever reason. But again, I mean, you guys were quote unquote the baby faces, but nothing really changed, right? It was still Demolition, still working the same matches.
Still cheated, still did everything we could to win.
It was just purely who you were against, but it didn't matter, right? You were already over. Fans were already cheering you. And then on July 29th, 89, you lost the tag titles to Tully and Arn, Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
And that had to be a fun match, particularly for you, because you're in there with two guys that I'm sure you were very familiar with and met while you were in the Carolinas. Yep. So
And Arn was one of my best friends all through wrestling.
Yeah.
So, it was fun wrestling those guys. And, that was one of those matches where, they're the heels. So Bill and I just said, hey, you guys call the match, whatever you want to do, we'll do it. And so that was just, they called everything in the ring and that's what we did. And it worked out great.
Yeah. And you had a kind of a series of matches, right? You had the one on Saturday Night's Main Event where you guys got disqualified leading up to it and everything else. So it was kind of a little thing working, but I mean, Tully and Arn were so great together. You guys were so great. So those were some great matches. And, it was just so cool, especially if you knew the history, right? With you had been in Carolinas, you knew these guys. I'm sure Bill had known him somewhat from the past. Yeah. So,
well, it was and then to get Andre the Giant, and Bobby Heenan involved in a match, and you know, later on, that's when we ended up wrestling Andre and Haku.
You know, that's where I was going. You regained the tag titles, but you end up losing them then the second time to Andre and Haku. And then you won them back from him at WrestleMania 6. But this was obviously kind of at the tail end of Andre's career. But it was kind of a cool thing. It always seemed like kind of a nice gesture to give Andre a little run as tag champ there at the end of his career. You know, kind of a tribute to him or whatever you want to call it. What did you think of working at Andre at this time?
Oh, I loved it because, you know, we were friends. Yeah. And, you know, he was hurting a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, he liked working with Bill and I because he trusted us. So we still made him look like Andre the Giant, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we could have did some different things that would have made him not look so good, but that's just not how we were, you know? And you didn't want to get the Giant mad at you anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he could, if he wanted to take control, what were you going to do?
Exactly. Exactly.
There's not much the guy of that size. What are you going to do?
Yeah. And you know, Haku is just a gentleman and just a great guy. So, you know, it was fun to work with our friends, you know, and you know, that's what the whole business is about, is, you know, you get all these friends and you work together and have a good time and you all make money and nobody gets hurt. And, you know, you put on a good show for the fans, and that's what it's all about.
Sure. Yeah. And like I said, when you regained the titles at WrestleMania 6, you were just the third team to have held them three times. Your first reign at that time was the longest reign in company history. We talked about it earlier, but I mean, those milestones don't really click or register at the time when you're in the wheel, in the grind.
Right.
But now, I mean, once you were done and look back, did you ever reflect, say, hey, that was kind of cool that we hit those milestones?
Well, I look back on everything, and, you know, Bill and I talk about it all the time. It's like, how in the world did we do all of that? You know, now, you know, I drive, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours to Detroit to catch a plane, and I get to a town. It takes you about 7-8 hours to get there, and then you sign a couple autographs, you get in a plane, you come home. You know, back in the day, you're getting up at 4:30 in the morning after hurting because you worked the last match the night before, and you get to the town, and you got to get to the gym, you got to train, you got to eat right, you got to do all that, and you're doing that for 3 or 4 weeks straight.
Yeah,
and you finally get home for 2.5 days and you see your family, you kiss your wife and your kids, and you're off again. And, you know, we look back at that now and it's like, how in the world did we do all that? You know, it's just, you know, we're so spoiled now. You go sign autographs and meet the fans and talk to them. You know, back then you're killing yourself every day. So,
yeah,
you look back at what we did and it was phenomenal. It was a great experience, and you just can't believe that you went through all that.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine when you're in that, it's just such a blur, right? From town to town, you're almost like, hey, what town are we in?
You don't even know what you did. It's just like the normal human being can't believe what you just did, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's why you love the business, you know?
Yeah. Well, you have to. I mean, you have to be a part of it. You've got to love it or it's just going to break you.
Right.
And so around 1990, when Crush was brought in to make you guys the three-man team, what did you and X think at that time? Did you have any reservations about adding a third member?
Well, no, because, you know, Bill got really sick and he couldn't get in the ring and wrestle. So in order to keep the demolition going, we had to bring somebody in.
Yeah.
So Vince brought Brian in, and Brian was a great, great guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was hard for him to come in with a team that's already been champions and, you know, but he did it. He did a good job and came in, and we had a little run with Crush.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought it was fun. It worked, right? That three-man team, that free bird rule type thing. And Crush was a big guy. He looked good with you guys.
Yeah. And there was no choice. We had to do it.
Well, sure. Of course. right? It was either, you know, that or be done with it pretty much, I guess. But
right.
Yeah. And one of the biggest things I always think of when I think of Demolition's run was when the Road Warriors came in 1990. And obviously everybody thought, oh hell, it's Road Warriors versus Demolition. We're ready to see this. But I don't know. It kind of fell flat. You didn't have that big match or whatever that everybody hoped for. What do you think was the issue there? Why did it not seem to, it didn't seem to have the hype it should have?
Well, you know, we were the tag team champions and we got over in the WWF, mm-hmm. and those guys were over in the NWA, and they were two different fans. So when they came up there, we were still baby faces, and Vince thought that they were going to be baby faces right off the bat. But, you know, half the fans were still like, well, we like the Demolition. We don't like the Road Warriors. So it kind of fell flat. They should have worked an angle before they put us together. They should have never put us together right away.
Right.
They should have had them in the territory and make them get them over there. Because they weren't over there.
Sure.
You know, it would have been just like us going to the NWA. Well, we wouldn't have been over when we got there. We would have, the fans got to see you and appreciate you. And, you know, they got to like you or hate you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it was for the Road Warriors. They had a tough time coming in there going against us.
Well, yeah, because it's funny because obviously if them come in WWE, a lot of people are going to see the Road Warriors as, well, who are these Demolition knockoffs? Because they knew you guys. And it probably would have been the same if you guys had went to Crockett. It'd be like, oh, who are these Road Warrior knockoffs? Because that's who they were familiar with. And yeah, you're right, right? I mean, I feel that's the same way, right? That they had established it, built it. You guys needed to build towards a big match at some point on a big show. And I don't know. You did a lot of six mans with the Ultimate Warrior thrown in there and stuff. And it just didn't feel like it was... give the proper build.
It wasn't a main match. You know, it was just kind of like Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. They brought Rick in. And it just kind of fizzled. If they would have brought Rick in and never put Rick and Hogan together for like a year, you know, Rick could have been Rick, Hulk could have been Hulk.
Yeah.
And then get an angle going against each other. Yeah. Then it would have been the biggest match of all time.
Yeah. How much of that do you think is, you always hear that Vince has the mentality of everybody else's talent's inferior to mine. So how much of it do you think is, oh, these are NWA guys coming into my world and I can't have them portrayed on the same level as my guys?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly right. And that's why they put them together right away. So Hulk's bigger than Rick.
Yeah,
the Demolition is bigger than the Road Warriors. It's just, you know what I mean? It's, yeah, that, you're exactly right.
Yeah, well, it's a shame because, I mean, that was money. Those are money feuds that worked right.
But business-wise, it should have not put us together and not put them together right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just my thought. And everybody's got a thought.
Well, sure. But, and you talked about Axe having some health problems. Everything. What ultimately led to Axe leaving the WWE? Was it the health issues and just not being able to work anymore?
Well, he was supposed to be an agent there, and then he was all geared up to do that. And then at the last minute, they decided not to make him one. Mm. So that was the end of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was obviously some contested years there when Axe left, right, with some lawsuits and different things and.
Yeah,
and whatnot. I mean, that's all been sorted out since. But you were still in the WWE, and from like 91 to 93, you wrestled. We mentioned earlier you wrestled as the Repo Man.
Yeah.
And what was your first impression when you were presented or saw that gimmick?
I loved it. I thought it was going to be something that I really had to work hard to become. And yeah. I thought I did it. People didn't know that I was smashed before.
Yeah.
So I did do my job, you know, and I made some good money. I worked with, you know, top guys.
Sure.
And, you know, with a gimmick like that, it's not one where you're going to be the world champion. You're going to have good matches and put people over. And I didn't mind that at that time of my career, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you were. You know, always... Go ahead.
Yeah, I had so many guys that have done jobs for me and got me over. You know, I thought, well, you know what? It's time for me to do the same thing for some other people.
Sure. And that's, I mean, that's supposed to be the natural progression of the business. That's what it's supposed
to
be.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody gets the big head and, you know, now they think it's not the entertainment business anymore. They don't want to get beat or.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
I mean, that's just how it is. But yeah. I always knew that after wrestling, I'd have another life.
Yeah.
And wrestling wasn't the number one thing in my life. You know, my family and God, and you know, that was wrestling was just a tool to you know, get a house and a car and this and that.
Yeah, so many guys have trouble with that, right? Transitioning from the wrestling to the non-wrestling.
So many people do.
It's sometimes I'm not going to throw out names. Sometimes it's a little embarrassing how they conduct themselves, and it's a shame.
a lot of people have never had a regular job.
Sure. Yep.
you know how can you be, you know, 45, 50 years old and not have a regular job after wrestling?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, man. I always enjoyed the Repo Man because I'm a big comic book fan, and Repo Man always reminded me of like a Batman villain, almost like a Riddler. Yeah. It had that mischievousness about it. I always found it kind of amusing and entertaining.
And that's how I came up with that whole gimmick was the Riddler.
Oh, there you go. See, yeah, well, it worked because that's what, like I said, it's what it always made me feel like, you know, some kind of comic book villain and mischievous guy. It was always fun to me. And
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and like you said, right? You knew Repo Man's role, right? You knew what he was doing. He's that guy that got some wins here and there, but you know what gonna beat, you know, Hogan or Savage for the title or whatever.
Right.
But that's okay because you've got to have that. You've got to have those guys.
You got to have that. Exactly. You got to have every different look. You have to have every different worker. Mm-hmm. You have to have top guys, middle guys, and bottom guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you went to WCW for a little over a year, and you were primarily the Blacktop Bully. That's what a lot of people remember you as.
Yeah.
And the one thing that always jumps to me was obviously, and a lot of people, is that the King of the Road match with you and Dustin Rhodes on the back of a moving flatbed truck. Whose idea was this, and what did you think of it?
That was Mike Graham's idea, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And
something that nobody had seen before.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, this is going to be huge for my career. I thought, well, now I'm going to get a chance to wrestle Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, you know, all these guys. You know, like, here I was going to become somebody again. And then it ended up being where we all got fired.
Yeah.
Me, Dustin, and Mike Graham, all three of us got fired.
Yeah, because you bladed, right? You bled. Is that right?
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Well, how do you have a match like that, though, with no blood? I mean...
exactly. I mean, it was really a brutal match in real life too. You know, it wasn't just working at it. You know, when you're going 60 miles an hour down the road and then the truck driver slams on the brakes, you know, I mean, you're going to fly.
Yep. I gotta think that was so weird because you guys are used to your routines and you know, a ring, right? Almost instinctively, right? You know where you're at in the ring, you know how to work, but this is a different scenario. It had to be just, I don't know, a wild experience.
It was so fun. We were laughing during the match. And,
oh, I bet.
You know, a few times, you know, it's like, Dustin, what the hell are we doing in here? You know, and, you know, he's throwing cow manure at me or, you know, I mean, it just, you know, it was good.
But it worked. I mean, it was fun. And if people remember it, and you got a big win out of it, even though, like you said, it didn't enable you to go anywhere because of the firing, but still.
Yeah.
And then you went on, you wrestled, right? You wrestled a lot in independence. You had another short run in WCW, I think, doing a golf gimmick for a while. Mr. Hole-in-One.
I was hoping to get on, you know, travel and get on a pro, you know, celebrity tournament deal. That's kind of why I was doing that.
Yeah.
But, then you got new bookers and things change and, you know.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, and then, like I said, you floated really big. But in 2007, you appeared at a Millennium Wrestling show in Ontario, and that kind of helped, what the story goes, try to help reunite you with Axe and doing some of your things. So how did that develop for you to start making appearances and working together again at that time?
Well, we just ended up getting together there, and it was such a good response. We just said, hey, you know what? We need to go on the road with this.
Yeah.
So then we started kind of wrestling again here and there, and, you know, having a good time wrestling. You know, we were both hurt so bad we couldn't, you know, have great matches or anything. But, we ended up starting to wrestle and starting to do different autograph deals, and we've been together ever since.
Yeah, but you were at that point in your career where you didn't have to have the great matches. It was just the aura of, oh, here's Demolition, getting to see Demolition.
And at that time, now you're starting to talk to fans and everything. So it was good for the fans and good for our egos too, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like you said, in around 2017, you and Axe kind of pretty much permanently retired from wrestling. But since then, you still got such an active appearance schedule. You do lots of conventions, lots of appearances. How much do you enjoy that side of wrestling a lot? Where now it's just, you're not taking the bumps. You're just getting to go out and sign autographs and talk to the fans.
Oh, I love it now. The only part that I can't stand is the traveling. I mean, it just, yeah,
of course,
it is so bad getting on these flights, and the seats are made for, you know, it's almost like they're made for kids, you know, they're not made for adults.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you get up to first class and it still is real small seats.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I have so many miles on, you know, different airlines, you know, I get upgraded to first class. I could never afford to buy them.
Yeah.
But, you know, try to get up there as much as I can. But, you know, I'm still back in coach with everybody else, with the regular people, you know.
Yeah. It's cool. Because it's this great era now with, there's so many great conventions, so many great events out there. I mean, big events that are really drawing a lot of fans. And
we were just at the gathering in Charlotte too a couple weeks ago. Great crowd, and like you were talking about Raleigh, that was an incredible crowd there.
Yeah, you know? It's so cool that you guys can go out and get exposed to all these fans, and, you know, not have to get in there and and take the bumps or whatever else. You're still going to meet, still going to make the appearances, do the pictures and autographs. And it's just going to be, it's almost like now you get to enjoy all the work you did, right? Now you get to, this is the fruits of your labor, and you get to enjoy some of that now and appreciate it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have to ask you the question, and I fully understand if you cannot answer this.
Okay. But
given the new ownership and leadership in the WWE, when are we going to see Demolition in the Hall of Fame?
Boy, I don't know. You know, I first met Triple H when I was in WCW, and, you know, talked to him and everything, you know, hi, how are you? You know, never were close friends or anything, but he was always a great guy, and he knows a lot of the guys I know. And I think he's completely changed things up there right now. I think it's for the better.
Yep, seems like
last WrestleMania, he invited Bill and I to WrestleMania and to the Hall of Fame.
Oh.
And so he had tickets and everything for it. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, they got us last minute, and we already had somebody that was bringing us in for, you know, the WrestleCade.
Sure.
So
was that the first time you guys have been invited for all these years? Yeah, okay.
Yep, that was the first time. So, you know, we didn't think it was fair for the guy that brought us in that,
sure,
you know,
of course.
You know, we're with him, signing autographs for him, and he paid for us, and we're trying to make him money.
Sure, and I'm sure Triple H understands that.
Yeah, I hope he did, because we sure didn't snub him or anything. It was just, that was...
Of course.
You know, I mean, if it would have been planned, you know, 2-3 months ahead of time, and we would have known, we would have definitely went.
Sure.
But it just, you know, you can't do that to people, you know, so.
Absolutely. Well, man, I'm happy to hear that, because that sounds like a very positive step in the right direction, at least.
Yeah, but now what's not going might be the negative now.
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know if Triple H is that, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think he seems to have, at least, my perception, he seems to have a better appreciation of the history of the company and the business. And
And you know, there's so many great tag teams out there that could be in the Hall of Fame too.
Sure.
I think we did a great job, you know, not only the Demolition, but our individual careers were excellent. You know, I mean, Bill, the Masked Superstar, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yep.
I mean, how do you not have him in there?
Yeah. One of the super machines in WWE as well. Yeah. For all those years. I mean, I mean, a lot of people forget that, Bill's known as Axe, but my Lord, he was so just as big and over as the Masked Superstar. A lot of people forget that in the modern landscape of things.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, it boggles my mind that you can't have Demolition in the Hall of Fame. Just like it boggles my mind that Ivan Koloff's not in that Hall of Fame yet. And I understand you can't put everybody in. It's just, I understand there's this and that. And you always heard the stories that Vince was sore at Bill for the lawsuits. So he wasn't going to put, and I know you don't have to speak to that, but I'm just saying you don't have to, he wasn't going to put them in there, put you guys in there for that. But now that that's gone.
Right.
And I'm hoping. And because you have guys, you know, like Sid Vicious just recently passed away, not in the Hall of Fame yet. And, you know, so if they put him in, he's not there to enjoy that moment. And that's a shame. Right.
It seems like after people die, that's when they put them in.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm hoping that they, you know, while you guys are still active and doing these appearances and everything out there, I'm hoping, because you deserve it, obviously, but I'm hoping, and well, I know it's work. You. I mean, I understand it's whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a promotional. Yeah. I get it. But still, I mean, if you're going to have a Hall of Fame, how's Demolition not in?
I agree.
And, you know, but so hopefully we get to see that. I'm hoping. And I'm hoping that, you know, with the new regime, maybe things will move that way. And, you, as we start to, let's wrap things up a little bit. As you've wrestled pretty much every great tag team of this era, of that era, the Rock and Roll Express, Tully and Arn, the Rockers, Heart Foundation, British Bulldogs, Road Warriors. I mean, we could go on and on and on between Demolition, doing the Russian thing, everything else. In your mind, who was the best or the handful of best teams besides Demolition? And who did you most enjoy working with from that era?
Boy, I'll tell you, that's a tough question because there were so many guys. Absolutely. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I think one of the best matches I've ever had was Ivan and myself against the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've had some incredible matches. And then, you know, Bill and I against the Hart Foundation and you know, one of the funnest matches was Andre and Haku in the Sky Dome.
Yeah.
And then we wrestled Giant Baba and Andre in the Tokyo Dome. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've had so many great ones. It's just, you know, the British Bulldogs. It's just hard to even name them. Ken Patera, Billy Jack Haynes.
Yep.
You know, yeah. The One Man Gang and the Big Boss Man. Unbelievable tag team.
Yeah.
Earthquake, you know, and Tugboat. Gosh darn it. It a lot of fun. I was very lucky.
Yeah, and that's one thing. I'm not a huge fan. I'm not one of these guys. I'm not going to get here and knock on it. But I'm not a huge fan of modern wrestling. And part of it is I've always been a tag team fan. I love tag team wrestling. Yeah. And I miss that day of the tag teams with the tag team gimmick, that tag team look and that unity. And it's just, I don't know. It seems to be, you know, and the fact that tag teams were featured prominently and it could, you know, known could draw money. It just seems like that's lost right now. I hope it comes back at some point. But yeah, the 80s and 90s, there was it was so many guys that you thought these guys could have a run with the tag titles, and and believable. It was so great at such a time. And it's, to me, that's what makes it extraordinary. That's when you look back in the depth, that how much Demolition stood out, and that just adds to your legacy to me. Of you're so deep, so many great teams, and here you guys were the top of that, and we're outstanding.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you having me on your show too.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we wrap down here, you obviously, like we said, you make appearances, you've got, you know, action figures coming out with various companies. What, you talked about a book. What's next with Demolition? Tell us, I mean, is there anything you can tell us about this book at all, and what's going on with that, or what else is out there for Demolition?
Well, the book you know, I've had a lot of people approach me to do a book on myself, you know, and, you know, the tag team Demolition and just, you know, my career growing up. Mm-hmm. And I did an interview with a gentleman out in England, and it was a first class company that did all this stuff. And
mm-hmm. Yep.
And he said, you know, we'd like to do a book on you. And I ended up signing a contract with them, and they have, you know, millions of people watching their show and everything. And
yeah,
so hopefully, you know, I'm kind of a boring guy in real life. I'm just, you know, regular guy. I terrible jokes, terrible, you know, I love everybody. There's not any controversy. And, you know, the first thing they, you know, they wanted to have a controversy, you know, cause that's what sells books. And I said, well, sure. I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody. I'm not going to, you know, say who cheated on the road, who did this, sure. or, yeah. you know, I said, I'm just not like that. I'm a very positive person, and that's what I want the book to be about. And, you know, maybe there's some inside stories or something that people might like, but, you know, I just I don't want to knock the business or anything. I want to be positive, you know?
Yeah. Those are my favorite books. I don't care about the dirt and all that. That's not me.
Yeah.
I want to hear about the matches and the shows and the, and how, you know, gimmicks developed and just stuff like that, right? That inside, you know, inside baseball, as they say, on the happenings. That's what I like. That's what fascinates me. And to me, there's enough there that's interesting enough. You don't need all that other stuff. I mean, there's enough interesting there just talking about the business. And I look forward to that. And obviously, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, there has to be a sizable chunk of this book about Demolition since it was such a prominent part of your career.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be a big chunk on the Demolition.
Good. All right. Well, I mean, obviously I look forward to that. And obviously, like we said, you guys are out there doing all kinds of appearances. What's the best way? Is there a central way that people can follow Demolition or you to kind of keep track of where you're going to be and where you're going to be appearing?
Yeah. Search and Destroy You on Instagram.
There you go. All right. Well, yeah, I follow you obviously. And I know. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. You guys hype all your upcoming thing. You post, you know, quite a bit of stuff, share a lot of stuff with people, post Demolition stuff.
Yeah, Bill's the one that does all that, and I'm on Twitter too, at Real Demo Smash, but I'm not on there very often.
Okay,
like I say, I'm so busy. I got, you know, I got so much stuff going on.
Yeah,
you know, I owned a business for 14 years, and I was so busy then.
Yeah,
and I sold the business 4 years ago, and I'm busier now than I ever have been.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, at least now though, right? You get to pick and choose, right? You get to set your schedule.
Yeah. Now I'm with the grandkids all the time, all summer long, every day they were here.
Oh man, that's gotta be great. I mean,
yeah, that's huge. Family's the most important part.
Yeah. How much do the grandkids know about, you know, grandpa and his face paint wrestling days?
Well, they all know about it. And the youngest one's the one that's into it.
Yeah.
The older one and my older granddaughter, you know, they don't put it over too much.
There has to be a little bit of disbelief, right? When they look at Demolition, say, that's you?
Well, yeah. You know, I was at one of the signings not too long ago, and one of the guys gave me a magazine cover where I got Robert Gibson in a rear chin lock, or, you know, cranking on his head, and that's on the cover.
Yeah.
So I brought that home. My granddaughter says, why do you act like that anyways? You know, it's like, just come on, Charlotte, that's wrestling, you know,
because grandpa
head walked away.
Grandpa got paid to.
Yeah. And then little Lincoln, the youngest one, that's the greatest thing of all time, you know? And it's just like, you know, the other two just look at it and go, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. They bring you down to reality in an awful hurry.
Yeah. Does the youngest one have some figures of Grandpa and everything that he plays with?
Oh yeah. Every figure I get, I got to give them. And
absolutely.
You know, and don't take it out of the package, you know? And, and then he's one day we were at a show, and His name's Lincoln. He's 8 uh-huh. years old.
Yeah.
I say, Papa, he says, is Axe there? I says, yeah, why? He says, I'd like to speak to him if I could. So I look over at Bill. I go, hey, Axe, Lincoln wants to talk to you. So they got him on speakerphone, and he's talking to Axe like he's 30 years old, you know, like, yeah, Axe, how you doing today? You know, what's going on? You know, have you guys booted anybody in the face today? And, you know, what are you guys up to? I mean, it's just the funniest thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I can imagine. Yeah. And, like I said, you guys got a lot of cool stuff. Lots of different figures and stuff still out there today, right?
The major bendies now are the ones that are out there. Those are selling like hotcakes.
Absolutely, right? You got the bendies, and those you had the big, what they call the big rubber guys with those guys.
Yep.
Like the old LG. Guy. Yeah. And I've got the figures from who is it? Epic Toys, right? I think it is. The Hasbro Epic. Style. Yeah, yep. With the switchable heads. I've got those figures. Those are so cool. They're sitting right over here on my shelf right beside me. And and you guys, I mean, you have a pro wrestling tee store with lots of shirts out there. And Demolition's still out there. So everybody go check it out. You know, you buy these figures, buy the shirts, go see Axe and Smash. They're out there all over the place, all over the country. And,
and we really appreciate it too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a fun thing. And I hope, man, I need to get out and see you guys. And, when I do, I'll introduce myself and everything, but, I'm hoping to see you guys soon. And I appreciate it. So, Barry, I appreciate your time and talking to me. And and maybe we can, we can revisit down the road, do a part two, dive a little deeper into something and talk again. But I do appreciate your time, Barry.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on. And I definitely want to meet you.
Absolutely. Tell Axe I said hi. And if he ever if he ever gives any consideration to doing a podcast appearance, tell him to give me a call.
I will for sure. Hey, I just want to thank all the fans too. The fans are what made the Demolition.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
And thank
it's,
you all.
I mean, it's still alive. You guys are as popular as ever, and it's just a great thing. And again, hopefully we get to see Demolition get that book in and see you guys in the Hall of Fame and get to make that appearance and get that recognition because it's well deserved.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. Very special thank you to Barry Darso for coming on and talking to me. Hopefully, I get to revisit with him in the future, maybe do a little deeper dive on some particular Demolition matches, etc. Guys, make sure you follow me on X. I'm at The Dave Dynasty. That way you can keep track of everything I do, all the pictures, article, newspaper clippings, everything else that I post. That's the best way to do it. And it's also a lot of times your first chance to hear my guest announcements. So make sure you follow me there. Also, make sure you go check out all the other WrestleCopia network of podcasts, such as the one we mentioned earlier, the Regional Wrestling Podcast, but all the others as well. They're all fun listens that shine a light on wrestling history with great guests and entertaining topics. So go check them out. You can find them on your favorite podcast platform, or you can find them all at WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. They are located at ClassicWrestling.net, or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Now, as I mentioned earlier, coming this Sunday, September 22nd, will be the first episode of the Stampede Wrestling Deep Dive, looking at January 1988. So look forward to that. And then, again, like I said, if you'd followed me on X, you would have known this, but coming on next week's regular episode of the podcast, I will have guest Baron Von Raschke on the show. He is making just his second ever podcast appearance. And when I talked to Baron and recorded the interview, we focused on his years in Indianapolis for the WWA, and we discussed his new documentary, The Claw, which is available on Amazon Prime. Baron was in classic form, very entertaining and hilarious. Lots of fun to talk to and to have on the show. It was such an honor. I was out of my mind. I couldn't believe it. It was so surreal to be talking to the legendary Baron von Raschke. So you're going to want to make sure that you check that out next week. And thank you all of you listeners, supporters, for all the follows, the interactions. But like I've said a few times here, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I have some great guests coming up just in the next few weeks. That's not even to mention beyond. But in the next few weeks, you know, beyond, you know, the Baron, I have, you know, Jeannie Clark, Brock Anderson, John Nord. I have Jerry Oates coming up in the future and many, many more. So you don't want to miss any of these fascinating conversations that I have with these incredible talents. So make sure you subscribe so that you never miss an episode. But guys, dude, thank you for your support. Thank you for your listens. Thank you for all that you do that makes wrestling nostalgia possible. And as I say every episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menaker thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.